Live from Drift Bar for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
1-1 the count. And the next pitch swung on and hit in the air to right center. This ball's tagged pretty well. And back at the wall, jumping and making the catch is Chaz McCormick. Up into the scoreboard in right center. He makes a remarkable leaping catch. And the kid from Westchester, Pennsylvania, just broke the hearts of tons of Philly fans with an extraordinary play.
What a great call. What a great moment as the Houston Astros go into Philadelphia. They take 2 of 3 in the city of brotherly love, and the Astros are up in the World Series 3-2. He's Blank. I'm Branham. Brendan way back at the studio behind the glass. It's Belmer on site with us at Drift in the Heights. They're kind enough to open up early for us. We want you to come out and say hello to us. Chewy's already out here. We want everybody to come out here. 1207 West 20th in Houston. While we're here, 97.5 Beer Bucket Special. Watch the Astros playoff run. If you're looking for a spot to watch the game tomorrow, this is it. Watch all of the Texans games yesterday. This is it. They have the Sunday ticket package, Red Zone. You can put it on any game you want. It's also the official LSU Houston headquarters. Great drink specials, 2 biggest screens in the Heights, wall-to-wall TVs. A great spot to spend your Friday afternoon. Great spot to spend your college football Saturday. Great spot for your NFL Sunday. And a great spot to see if the Astros can lock up another World Series. They have an opportunity for a closeout game on Saturday at home behind Framber Valdez. We'll talk a little bit later. I've seen a lot of people, Blankers. I know I'm already getting a little bit sidetracked here. Talking about how this World Series is over. I cannot stand that talk, and I feel anybody who is talking that way hates the Astros. I really feel that way.
When you remember what happened when you didn't win a home game the entire World Series against Washington, and you know that you shouldn't be thinking that far ahead.
Yep.
It's one step at a time, one game at a time. Let's focus on game 6 and do your best to take care of business and then worry about all that other stuff. But let's not get ahead of ourselves, because you have a track record of a lack of success that tells you you should not be doing that.
I think it's outsiders that hate the Astros, if I'm being completely honest. Trying to put the hex on the Astros, trying to be a hotshot when doing it as well. But Brendan bumped in with that Chaz McCormick catch in center field, off Real Muto, right center. You know, off the bat, I had, you know, is that ball gone? Like, I was asking myself off the bat, is that ball out of here? Seeing Chaz kind of, you know, take the angle on it, I was like, it might not be out, but probably off the wall. And then Chaz played it so well, leaped up, made the grab against the chain link fence, which is a more difficult catch than just the padded wall. One of the best defensive moments in Houston sports history.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, when you think about what was at stake on the biggest stage in the last series of the year, with a chance to, I guess conceivably, at least best case scenario, games tied, but you look at it and you're like, oh my God, you know, for as much as you've, you know, bitten every nail on both hands to get to this point where you still were in the lead, that was a game changer. And you know, I started thinking, would Jake Myers have made that catch? You know, how many guys could have made that catch? Because you can't look down at the track. You can't slow up and start to prejudge where the fence starts. He just, you know, he dialed into it. You know, your feet tell you you're on the warning track. He used his other hand to kind of let him know how close he was to the wall, and then just timed it at the peak of his jump to get that baseball. And, you know, coming down with it and then securing it, holding it up, I was just a huge exhale going, oh, my God, he caught it. And it has to rate up there with some of the best plays that we've seen in Houston sports. Not just, like you said, defensive plays. Yeah, there are some in basketball for sure, football with J.J. Watt and others. But my goodness, what a catch that was.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at it from like an Astros perspective, the Brantley diving catch coming forward in the ALCS where he was able to double judge off of first base, that was a big one. The Hakeem Olajuwon block in Game 6 of the 94 NBA Finals is up there as well.
Did Beltran not have one in that playoff run
I'm
where
sure
he was back to home plate and made a big
I know
catch
Edmonds against, made a huge one against
Edmonds
the Astros.
Made the one completely back to home plate.
There's probably some that I'm forgetting, even probably in this golden era, and there's probably others that I'm forgetting during that Killer B run, too. I know Springer did. I just can't pinpoint it, can't isolate it. 713-780-ESPN if you want to help us out. Or you can tweet us. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Looks like the text line is down again, so you'll probably have to tweet us if you want to reach us that way, or just call in at 713-780-ESPN. That defensive play, unbelievable. The fact that he's from Westchester, PA, 30 minutes, grew up as a Philly fan, adds to, like, the romanticism of the play, too, if you want to go there. Trey Mancini in the eighth inning, that tough one, you know, one hopper that Kyle Schwarber just absolutely hammered. Thank goodness Trey Mancini was holding the runner on, was able to just pick it up, tap the bag at first base, got out of a dangerous spot in the eighth inning. But if you look at the series, and when you ask the question, what has been the biggest difference maker in this series, 713-780-ESPN, I think you can point to the defense, because the starting pitching, we've seen good starting pitching both sides. The Astros have had good starting pitching. They've had not so great starting pitching. Same thing with the Phillies. I think the bullpens have been very good both ways. The offenses have both been a little bit up and down. I think that the biggest difference maker, and maybe it's because we have Game 5 as the most recent game, and you have those two big plays of Trey Mancini in the eighth, Chaz McCormick in the ninth, I think it's fair to say that the Astros defense, which we knew was good all year long, although you didn't expect Trey Mancini to be in this conversation, you might not have even expected Chaz McCormick in center field to be in this conversation. You can point to the defense for the Astros, which was an advantage coming into the series that we've seen play out as an advantage for the Astros as well.
No question, except for I would quickly throw that back to you before we discuss that and say, would you have felt differently in the eighth inning if Chaz looked at Tucker looked at Chaz and that ball fell somewhere between them? Because I don't know why there wasn't more communication on that play. Thank goodness Kyle Tucker was able to look down, refocus, look back up, and catch that baseball. But you're right. Overall, the defense has been spectacular. We've been talking all year about the defense of a Jeremy Peña. I mean, he hasn't let you down. Everybody that's making plays, it was great to see so many guys step up last night. And it also, aside from what was going through my head in terms of would Jake Meyers have made the play that Chaz made, the other question was, wasn't this the guy that Dusty Baker didn't want to play center field and didn't believe as a center fielder? Because the guy might have just saved the entire season last night. And Gary, don't call, because I'm not banging on Dusty Baker. I'm just saying, you know, Chaz McCormick, again, some things work out themselves and then it works out for the best. It worked out fantastic again last night. The defense all over the place was great. I don't know, you know, and we'll get into more about your emotions throughout the game, but when Yuli goes down, the first thing I thought about was the old adage in baseball that if he's out and Mancini goes to first, I'm thinking, how many scoops is he going to have to make? Because inevitably something's going to happen at first base that's going to put the spotlight on him. You know, the ball always finds you when you're new in a game, and I thought, man, if Yuli goes out and there's a defensive play that has to be made at first base, can Mancini make it? And lo and behold, whether he smothered it and you know, whatever he had to do to make that play, which was off the bat at over 100 miles an hour, was just, you know, to your point, lead you to believe this team is playing great defense.
Yeah, Mancini said after the game he just tackled the baseball. So, like, is he a great defender? No. Was that a great defensive play? Yes. And James Click, all along, he traded for Trey Mancini because of the glove. That's why he brought him into the Houston Astros, because he knew he needed his glove in Game 5 of the World Series. Justin Verlander was talking after the game, and Justin Verlander, you know, maybe we buried the lead, first career World Series victory in a storied Hall of Fame, decorated career. Listening to Justin Verlander on the FS1 broadcast, which they had to dump him, by the way, because he got so fired up, this to me was like, basically the tenor and the sound of, I think, every Astro fan after Game 5.
Man, you see it off the bat, right? You know, I'm watching the play right now. You see it off the bat right there. You see Presley's reaction, so you know it's hit pretty good. You see Chaz going back, and just, like, man, when that play's made, it's just like, holy cow. You know, I can't believe he made it. You know, I can't believe he made that play. There's been, you know, if you're going to win a championship, things like this need to happen. You know, Jordan hitting the home run Game 1 against Seattle. You know, just these amazing moments that, you know, hopefully if we can finish this thing off, you look back at all these moments and just be like, you know, these are just such incredible things that the thing that it went your way and the guy made a great play and stepped up in a big moment. I mean, Trey Mancini making that play in the ninth inning as a defensive replacement. You know, he came in for Yuli with a knee injury and, you know, Trey said it himself after the game. He's not necessarily known for his defense, but we gave him player of the game after the game for that damn play. It's just incredible, and that saved our game for us. And, you know, that's every guy in this locker room comes here with an attitude of willing to win and do whatever it takes, whether it's at the plate or not. You know, Trey hasn't been hitting the ball all that well yet, but he comes up with a great play that helps us win. Sorry. When the ball game.
Oh, you're fine.
Hey, man, you end up with one.
You can do it, buddy. I'm just so fired up, guys. I mean, this team, these guys are special. And we come here every day willing to do whatever
fine,
it takes.
JV, don't worry.
I'm sorry, Poppy.
JV was fired up.
He was.
Fired up after his first ever World
you
Series victory.
Because he took a weight of the world the size of Mount Kilimanjaro and finally got it off his shoulders. Because as much as he didn't want to admit it publicly, it was killing him, eating up him, and I think it made him extra tight in his starts, and including last night. I didn't think he was vintage JV by any means. I didn't think he was over the world, over the top impressive. He wiggled out of a couple of jams. He did what he needed to do. He emptied the tank, maybe an inning early, that in the regular season you probably would have seen him out there again. But then they held on and got him what he needed most, which was a win to get the monkey off his back.
Yeah, it was a moment. I felt Justin Verlander was an Astro fan more than anything else in that moment yesterday. Just kind of started talking about the game and then just started firing himself up over what has been this Astro run. Still a win away from their second World Series, though. That Chaz McCormick catch, where does it stack up amongst the greatest catches in Astros history? Where does it stack up amongst the greatest defensive plays that we've seen in this city's sports history as well? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. Call us, tweet us today. Text line is down. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, Ryan Pressly, the save he had yesterday, the five-out save, his biggest moment as an Astro. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, live from Drift, 1207 West 20th, 97.5 Beer Bucket Special. During the whole day, we're going to be out here until 3. The Wheelhouse will be following us up until 7 o'clock as well. Normally open at 3 o'clock midweeks, but they were kind enough to open up early for us. So happy hour all the way until 8 o'clock as well. Dollar off all draft beers, ranch water specials, house wine specials, vodka specials, Maker's Mark specials as well. So swing on by, hang out with the Killer Bees, hang out with the Wheelhouse a little bit later as well. Ryan Pressly yesterday, you know, we had the conversation about Chaz McCormick, who saved Ryan Pressly with that that catch he made in right center field, took away extra bases from Real Muto in a one-run game in the ninth. We mentioned the Trey Mancini play where Kyle Schwarber hammered the ball right down the first base line, but Trey Mancini was there, picked up a very tough short hop, tapped the bag, helped Ryan Pressly out there, was able to get out of that inning. But Ryan Pressly, who has been a really good Houston Astro, I mean, ever since he was acquired from the Minnesota Twins as a reliever, has had big moments. He's had a long history of success, has been very good. We tease with closers like we always do because closers sometimes get a lot of negative publicity, some negative PR, because if they blow one save, yep, despite having 45 the rest of the year, people look more at the one blown save than the 45 saves that they converted. So the Ryan Pressly nickname, having fun with that. But Ryan Pressly coming into that game, runners at first and third with one out, trying to preserve a one-run lead. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marsh strikes him out on three pitches, gets the Schwarber ground out, and then, you know, I know you get put Bryce Harper on base with that hit-by-pitch, which scared me, by the way, because it brought up the game-winning run to the plate in Nick Castellanos. Five-out save for Ryan Pressly in one of the biggest moments. That was his biggest moment as a Houston Astro.
Yeah, he's been nails all playoffs. I mean, the fact that, you know, we, like you said, we've scrutinized what we've seen. We maybe scrutinized more than some others. But at the same time, we knew he had issues throughout the year. First, his velocity was down. Then he was still dealing with the knee injury. Then it was he couldn't go back-to-back days. And you started wondering, and they gave him the extension. And you're wondering, well, you just gave him an extension. How can you be sure this is a guy that's going to be able to close the door the way he's supposed to as a closer? And yet in the playoffs, playoffs, he has done everything that you have asked him to do and more. He has stepped up big when you needed him most. I thought the fact that he was able to get that strikeout, which was so hyper important with a runner on third base and only one out, was just, you know, amazing in the fact that it's easier said than done. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have the strikeout pitches to be able to, but to execute that plan and get that out when he needed it, you're right. It wasn't perfection in the ninth, and there were opportunities where it could have backfired and gone the other way, but he got it done. You know, he toughed it out. He threw a lot of pitches coming off of 19 the day before, and you just got to love what he's been able to do for this team in the postseason.
What are the other things when you look at the bullpen? Because Presley was, I mean, you get five outs in that spot when you inherit runners in the corners, one out, and the tying run at third base, and you keep the lead intact. You give Justin Verlander the victory because that run scores, kiss the victory goodbye for JV. Maybe you can still salvage the game, but you kiss the victory for JV goodbye. A lot of people looked at Dusty Baker and how he's managed so far in this World Series, and they had some hesitation about Dusty Baker and his usage of Justin Verlander in that game yesterday. And people have wanted a shorter leash from Dusty Baker on Justin Verlander in Game 1, which I think is the one critique that it's fair for Dusty Baker. Some people pointed to the Lance McCullers game, quicker leash for Lance McCullers in that game. I think there was a little bit of a method to the madness there that he wanted to keep the bullpen intact because I think he did throw the white towel in that game trying to get Game 4, Game 5, and he got Game 4, Game 5. So the method of the madness kind of worked out for Dusty Baker. People wanted him to be very aggressive with the bullpen, though, that, you know, the leash on Verlander shouldn't be long. And Dusty was asked before the game about the Verlander leash. He goes, "This is Justin Verlander. We don't have a leash." Now, that was more words than it was action because we saw Ryan Stanek warming up in the second inning. Verlander ended up getting through five, probably was done there. I mean, he threw 94 pitches. I thought that there was a question after the Bryce Harper double down the right field line to put a runner at second base, if you kept them in the game for Castellanos, because it was the third time through the lineup, which, you know, always worries people. I think Dusty handled that game perfectly yesterday. He was aggressive with the bullpen, used Neris for two. He needed to go to Abreu to get out of the inning because a couple of lefties were coming up. Abreu was fantastic. Montero, you know, a little shaky, but Presley was able to back up Montero. Look, there's no criticism going to Montero. Montero's been your eighth-inning guy all year, so it's not a bad decision to go there. But there you go. With the aggressive bullpen, the quick hook, he had that with Montero when he realized he wasn't there, and he used Presley for a rare five-out save. I thought Dusty managed perfectly yesterday.
Yeah, I have no problems with the way Dusty managed yesterday at all, and I think that you're right. He was definitely trying to preserve his high-leverage guys in a game that was completely out of reach. And I think that for a lot of, you know, for everything that was into it, the emotion of the crowd, the fact that they got into it right away in the first inning in Game 3, that the tone was set and you could feel from a momentum standpoint to the offense not, you know, stepping up and being, you know, doing the things that we've seen them do during the course of the year, but they haven't really done all season long. They've had a big inning here and there. They haven't been able to piece it together until last night when they finally did, to where Dusty was like, "This one looks like it's not going to be our night. So I might as well make sure that if this one gets away, I'm prepared for the rest of the series." He did that. Again, we can nitpick not having someone at least warming up when McCullers felt it slipping away. But other than that, I've got no issues with anything that Dusty has done. It's not his fault that of the three DHs that he can choose from, none of them seem to be doing anything. You know, Hensley's the closest to doing something, but it's unfortunate. It's not something he signed up for you know, which DH that he chooses from when all three are struggling. But overall, no problems with Dusty. We said we hoped he didn't do in the playoffs what he did in the regular season. He hasn't done that, and he's gotten the best out of the buttons that he's pushed. Montero, you're right. It wasn't his fault he went to the well again with Montero. Montero just gets into trouble sometimes back-to-back days with anything other than a fastball, and then guys start timing the fastball, and then he lost his control last night. But you know what? Thank goodness they got out of it, and all's well that ends well.
Yeah, I mean, he only gave up the one hit yesterday, right? Like,
it was his walks that was the problem.
The walks were the killers, especially in this spot. Like, you're facing, it was Castellanos that he led off with. So you're facing the bottom half of the Philly lineup out after Castellanos. So you're facing 5, 6, 7 due up in that inning. You're up by two runs. give up a home run to Castellanos before you walk Castellanos. That aggravated me.
Me too.
I've heard a lot of people talk about, oh, you have to demote Rafael Montero. The usage for Rafael Montero needs to disappear. That is ludicrous. This has been one of your best relief pitchers all year long. He's been better in the postseason than he was in the regular season. Your bullpen's been a weapon and nails the entire year. This whole demotion of Rafael Montero because he had one lousy outing in the World Series, really his only poor outing in the postseason, is ludicrous and is a prisoner of the moment type of thing.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous way to look at it because the only thing, I'm with you. Look, Castellanos is this series' version of Josh Donaldson last series. Just keep going at him and make sure that you don't give him a free pass. Make him earn it because right now he can't earn anything at the plate. And go get him. Instead, you lost control. You couldn't put a ball in the zone. And you put a guy, gave him a freebie on first base when, yeah, he had some better at-bats last night. But I don't think in any way, shape, or form anybody was afraid of Nick Castellanos because, to be honest with you, I think that for the first time all series they pitched around Bryce Harper last night. But, you know, even on the hit-by-pitch, they weren't going to give him anything to hit. They were going to live and die with Castellanos as opposed to anything Bryce Harper could do.
I didn't like that in the ninth, though.
But I think that that was the unintentional walk last night.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that in the ninth.
But do you agree the way his approach
was?
I
think it was Verlander's approach, too.
Yes, absolutely, no question. They were pitching around him all night long, and there was a discussion somewhere before the game amongst, whatever pitchers that we are not going to let Bryce Harper beat us tonight. And you could see that was their approach, the way they were going after him.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Thomas is leading us off today on the Killer Bees, so it better be good. Thomas, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hey, guys. Look, I'm Team Dusty, and just coming off a win and on the off day, just to open up the discussion and see what's going on. Did I miss something? I just don't understand the non-usage of Ryan Stanek these playoffs. And I know we're at this point where now it's like, okay, he hasn't pitched, so it's kind of scary to go on to him. But I just don't understand how he just fell off the trust circle. And I feel like it would, give some guys a break and, limit the batters seeing all our best pitchers so much. So, yeah, I'll hang up and listen to what y'all have to say about Ryan Stanek.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the call. Look, I think we're all puzzled by it. I think you indicated, Jeremy, that at a certain point it might be due to the fact that he has a tendency to put guys on base. But overall, there's a guy that had a 1.15 ERA, and I don't know if that was a discussion amongst the analytics people and Dusty that said, hey, look, this is something that can really burn you in the playoffs. We got to handle this differently, use him differently. I was a big fan of using him. I always said within four pitches you could tell which Stanek you were going to get. But obviously, if he gets out of it, then he's effective. His ERA says he's effective, but it is kind of puzzling how he's now kind of a more irrelevant guy that comes in maybe in a situation real early in a game, and how Dusty used him in the playoffs is completely different than the regular season. But the surplus of riches is something in which you don't need to consistently use him the way you used him in the regular season when you have all the arms to choose from that have been effective for this bullpen.
I'm quite honestly sick and tired of the Stanek conversation. Like, the bullpen has been fantastic. Why are we griping about Brian Stanek's usage? Like, where has Dusty went wrong with how he's used his high-leverage relievers? His plus guys have been dominant. Ryan Pressly, great yesterday. Rafael Montero had his worst postseason appearance, but he's been your setup guy, your eighth-inning guy, all year long. He's been terrific, better in the playoffs, has been outstanding. Like, I don't need to see Stanek over Montero. Neris has been kind of your fireman, come in a couple of spots. He's always been higher on the pecking order than Ryan Stanek as well. And quite honestly, Ryan Stanek all year long, I know the ERA was the best, relief pitching ERA number ever in Houston Astros history. All year long, he's been the fourth highest leverage pitcher on the Astros. Ryan Pressly's been at the top of that list. Rafael Montero's been second. Hector Neris has been third. And then it was Ryan Stanek. The only difference that the postseason brought to Ryan Stanek was that he got bumped for Brian Abreu. Brian Abreu went up a spot. Ryan Stanek went down a spot. And are you upset with Brian Abreu, who has not given up a run the entire postseason? So, like, this Ryan Stanek, I don't understand the usage. It's because Brian Abreu's better.
See, I don't know if you're coming at me or the listeners with that. I'm just saying I don't have a problem. I said Dusty pressed all the right buttons. It's just puzzling to me that a guy that was in that circle of dust that Dusty was using in more high-leverage situations just fell out completely.
But fourth. He was fourth the highest leverage pitcher all regular season, and then he got demoted below
the year.
He got demoted below Abreu.
It varied throughout the year.
Not really.
Yeah, there were times he was in the seventh or eighth.
Yeah, whenever somebody had the day off or they were on the injured list. But Stanek was never ahead of Neris. He was never ahead of Montero. He was never ahead of Presley. He would have the seventh when Presley was on the IL or Neris or Montero weren't available. But he was always fourth.
He had been above Montero for times during the season. He had been used in the seventh and eighth inning during the season.
Sure, but he was never ahead of Montero. That's not true.
Okay, I think it is true. And I think that there were times that he was using him more frequently in the seventh and eighth. And it is puzzling to try to figure out what happened. You're right, Abreu came on. I'm the biggest critic of Brian Abreu during the regular season. I've given him nothing but flowers all playoffs, and he continues to step up. It's just I don't understand what caused that change and what all of a sudden put a signal in somebody's pocket to say, hey, it's time for Abreu to step up. It's time for Stanek to be scaled back.
Yeah, and the only time that really it ever came into question was the Luis Garcia in the 10th inning instead of Ryan Stanek. I think that that's one fair like spot to critique the Ryan Stanek usage. But Ryan Stanek should not be pitching over Abreu, Neris, Montero, and Presley. They've been awesome in the playoffs. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. 713-780-3776. Also, where would the Astros be without the rookie Jeremy Peña? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get to the Peña conversation when we get to the Peña conversation. Killer Bees broadcasting at Drift in the Heights, 1207 West 20th. Swing on by. They were kind enough to open early for us. You got to swing over here. The beer's fantastic. It's ice cold. That's the best way to have it. Five domestic beers, $20 during the broadcast. This is also your official LSU alumni watch party every Saturday. And I heard they had a big game coming up this Saturday against the Crimson Tide of Alabama. So great spot to watch the Tigers play if you're an LSU fan. They have the two biggest screens in the Heights and a 250-inch screen on the south patio. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. Call us. Text line not working. You can tweet us. He's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Everybody's upset with the usage of Ryan Stanek, even though the guys above him have been fantastic, with the exception of Montero yesterday, when we understand that. Montero was not very good yesterday. I'm of the opinion that Stanek has been fourth in the pecking order behind Ryan Presley, Hector Neris, Rafael Montero for the entire year. Now, some of those guys have had off days. Some of those guys have been on the IL. Ryan Presley's had a stint on the IL. I don't think Montero and Neris have, but I don't remember vividly. Stanek appearances this year by inning. He's appeared more in the sixth inning than the ninth, eight in the sixth inning, five games in the ninth. He's appeared in 30 games in the seventh inning, 20 in the eighth. Some nights he does get bumped up because the other guys have been out, unavailable. Some nights he pitches in the eighth when the team's down 2-1 because they don't want to use Neris, Montero, or Presley in a minus game. Stanek's always been behind those three dudes.
I'm not going to sit there and just belabor this thing longer than we need to. I just think, obviously, everything changes in the playoffs. My question was, what changed?
Where Abreu got promoted.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. What all of a sudden made the light go on or made that decision and the timing of it to make it now? It's worked out. I'm not arguing with any of that. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just curious as to the thought process and the structuring of what went into all of a sudden Abreu feeling that he was ready, because we know that Abreu was another guy. ERA was stellar, but my big harp on him was sometimes between the ears with the great stuff that he had, things changed when he had traffic on the bases, and sometimes it was self-inflicted and other things. Look, again, I have tweeted this every time he has stepped up bigger and bigger. This is a guy that, you know, basically has taken the reins, run with them, and done a ton for this team. And it's been impressive. I'm just curious as to, you know, what struck a chord with whoever made the decision or however many guys made the decision to make that kind of a decision.
Yeah. If I had to guess, and not privy to these discussions, right, I would guess it's the high walk rate for Stanek compared to some of the other guys, like the whip. Some of the expected numbers aren't as high on Stanek, shockingly, because his ERA was very, very good. Although when we've seen Stanek in the postseason, he's been good. I think the one thing that we can criticize Stanek usage was when they went Garcia in the 10th inning as opposed to Stanek. But ahead of the other four, no problem there.
Do you think they're going to bring Montero back next year?
I don't. It depends on the money. Like if he loves Houston and he gives you a sweetheart deal, I'm open to it. But I would tend to say no.
I think he's going to get big money.
I do too.
And I think someone's going to elevate him to be their closer. And I think that honestly, the one thing with him is that because there's not that drop off. We obviously the big variation that catches everybody is a guy like Javier. But the one thing that I liked about Stanek was when he's on. And I always, again, I reiterate, I always say within four pitches you can tell what kind of Ryan Stanek you're going to get if he's going to be able to locate. But his splitty is so effective as a strikeout pitch that's why I like him a lot of times when they go to him if they need to get a big out in a high leverage situation. I think that's the one thing that I don't see that kind of strikeout pitch from a Montero. But when you have a fastball that, you know, hits 98, you can do a lot of things too.
Yeah, I mean, we're arguing about where Ryan Stanek, the best ERA and relief pitching history has been, and he's right now your fifth leverage guy. Who cares about like how they got here? He's currently fifth, which is an amazing luxury, right? Like,
oh,
it's pretty incredible that Ryan Stanek, because there's been 2017 World Series, Ryan Stanek's probably your best reliever, and now he's fifth on this team. It's insane.
It's an embarrassment of riches, and the fact that Dusty has all those different guys to choose from, every manager in baseball would love to be in his chair because he knows no matter what he's dealing with again, another embarrassment of riches with how many starting pitchers you have, when you get to the playoffs and we know you pull the hook quicker and you go and make moves quicker, the fact that you have all those guys to choose from when you pull the hook quicker is an amazing – I'm sure every manager in baseball is jealous of that.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go there. Eric, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, happy Friday, gentlemen. Love the show. Hey,
thank you.
Jeremy, I might have been one of the people we were exchanging last night about Montero, and I just want to clear up what I was saying. I'm definitely not ready to throw the guy out. I'm with sticking people. I think my question was, if we go into Game 6 or Game 7 with a lead and Abreu, who I was trying to – I guess I was trying to say that he is the reliever equivalent of Javier, in my opinion, right now. I mean, just he's on there, and I'm comfortable, and we're going to win that inning or that battle, whatever's in front of us. If we go in – if Abreu blows through the seventh inning and we have a run or two run – one or two run lead – and he's got their number, and it's good. I was just asking, would it be crazy to run Abreu out there again for the eighth and then Presley into the ninth? And that's nothing on Montero. That's just more of where Abreu is at the moment. And I'll hang up and listen, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for the call.
Appreciate it, Eric. Yeah, I did misunderstand your tweet. As far as it goes for Game 6, that's on the table. Like, you have to let the game speak to you. Like, it's cliche, but you do. And they love Abreu against the lefty pocket. Mm-hmm. That's why they went to Abreu for Marsh lefty, Schwarber lefty, and then they left him in the game for 2-3-4, so he would be the one to face Bryce Harper.
He's
so they
one
like
of the guys,
Abreu against
I was going to say, he's one of the guys they feel they are confident in that he will battle Bryce Harper and give Bryce Harper problems because that fastball is so dominant too. I mean, when you think about the entire situation with Brian Abreu, the one thing that you and I always talk about is what's more difficult for a pitcher than most people realize, and especially the common fan, is when you get through an inning and then you have to sit down and then you have to come back up and do it again. I think that because people forget, hey, you've been in the bullpen warming up. You're coming in hot. So you're coming in ready to go, and then especially if you're firing bullets and you're knocking guys off and you're taking guys out, you're feeling great, and then all of a sudden it's like you relax. If your offense puts a couple of hits together, now you're cooling off a little bit, and now they say go out there, warm up for 8 pitches, and give me exactly what you gave us last inning. And it's a little bit more difficult than people realize. I think that's something that they're kind of conscious of, too, in terms of how they use him and other relief pitchers, for that matter.
Yeah, he has done it 3 times this postseason, though, and he did it yesterday. And he did it against the heart of the order yesterday, 2-3-4. So if he's rolling, to Eric's point, in the seventh inning, and let's just say he faces 6-7-8 in that seventh inning, and he looks dominant, and then you know you have Marsh lefty, Schwarber lefty, then you have Hoskins coming up, who's not a lefty, but you have Harper looming. If Abreu's rolling, I do agree with Eric that you keep him in that game. I'm also not scared to go back to Rafael Montero. Like, the game has to speak to you. The situation has to matter, or it's obviously going to matter, but it has to make sense for an Abreu. I'm not opposed to it at all, and they've used Abreu in an up-down where he sits down for half an inning, comes back and pitches. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Back out there for Gary. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on?
How's it going, guys? Hey, want to disagree slightly on Montero. Obviously, he's been a horse all year, but it definitely reminds me of 2019, which I think I just drew a blank. Will Harris, is it? Yeah, like he was a horse all season. He was AJ's guy, but you've seen him kind of leaking oil in Game 6, right? He gave up a homer, and then he went back to him in Game 7 and basically blew the game. And I say that for Montero, being that obviously yesterday was kind of a disaster. I feel like his appearance prior, he had a little bit of trouble, but like this is the playoffs, like it's a micro ecosystem, and I'm not. This way, you know, discounting anything he's done prior, but yesterday was a sign that maybe he's running out of gas. I don't know. It just kind of reminds me of 2019 because the dude's been a horse, but yesterday should be taken into consideration. I'm not saying demote him, but yeah, it's not like a complete non-factor is what I'm trying to say.
I think Howie Kendrick was the perfect storm, too, for Will Harris. You're right, in Game 6 it was different, but it was also – it wasn't like he barreled it up and turned on it and really, you know, just unleashed one. You know, he caught one going the other way that caught the foul pole that I'm not going to completely blame Will Harris. I understand what you're saying. I think as it relates to Montero, though, you know, you're taking a guy that has thrown a lot of pitches now over the course of the last two games. I think that he's a guy that's going to be more lined up for Game 7 than Game 6. But Dusty's not afraid to go to him, and I'm sure that if he needs him late in the game, I don't think he's going to check with him, see how he feels, but I don't think Dusty's going to look past him.
Dusty spoke to the media today from his hotel room in Philadelphia. Hopefully they're sent on Broad Street. But he said that he expects all the relievers to be available. He said he does want to talk to Presley and Montero to kind of gauge where they feel. To Gary's point about doesn't necessarily want to demote him, but you look at him closer, I think a good comparison to this year's playoffs is probably Verlander. You're not demoting Verlander, but you might have a little watchful eye. The leash is probably shorter. I think that would be the same thing for Montero, that he's still your setup guy. He's still your second-highest leverage guy, but maybe the quicker hook. The differences between Montero and Harris, to me, well, I don't think it's an apples-to-apples comparison. And I've heard other people say this too, Gary. You're saying you don't want to demote him, which – thank you for that, because I've heard other people say that they do want to demote him, which I find to be very ludicrous because he's been fantastic the entire year. Does he make you nervous? Sure he does, but the results speak for themselves. The difference between Will Harris and Rafael Montero is that Will Harris had been used on back-to-back games. There's the day off today. There's a day off after Game 5. Also, the big difference between Montero and Harris, when I look at it, Rafael Montero was self-inflicted because of the walks. He only gave up one hit yesterday. It's not like the Phillies were just battering him all over the park. He gave up one hit. It's really more about Montero finding the command than it's like the lack of stuff from Rafael Montero.
And I think also kind of analyzing the situation too, it's not like you're facing Real Muto or Harper. You know, you're facing a guy in Castellanos who's been struggling too. Don't do him a favor by walking him.
Yep.
Go and attack him. That you know, especially at that point in the inning. Go get him. Don't let him get a free pass.
713-780-ESPN. Call or tweet at Pac-Man Joel, at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees. Maybe we'll have that Pena conversation when we come back. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drift in the Heights on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drift in the Heights, 1207 20th. Swing on by, hang out with us, drink specials. Great place to watch the game if you can't make it today. Game 6 World Series tomorrow. This is the official LSU alumni watch party. They play Bama tomorrow. Great spot to watch that game if you're an LSU fan in the city of Houston. Massive outdoor patio. It is dog friendly. 250-inch screen on the south patio. The two biggest screens in the Heights. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Jeremy Pena has been fantastic for the Houston Astros. He hit the go-ahead home run yesterday off Noah Syndergaard, chased him from the game, the solo shot in the fourth inning. It was probably his last batter anyways, but he chased him from the game. Pena had a three-hit performance yesterday. Pena was 3-for-4, couple of RBIs, of course scored the run on the home run as well, and the Astros never trailed after that solo homer by Jeremy Pena in the fourth. He's weird because he's terrible on the outside breaking ball away from the zone.
I was just going to say it.
But he clobbers hanging breaking balls.
The thing that just mind-boggling to me is every time, every game I think in this series in particular, that they start him off with a breaking pitch on the outside corner and he flails and misses, or he strikes out because they throw the same pitch but they started at him and it having it finish inside. And I keep saying to myself, he cannot hit a breaking pitch. And like you said, and then when you need him most, he comes up timely with the big bomb yesterday with the hits they needed. I was a little bit perplexed they brought the infield in the first inning for the single, because it wasn't like he scorched it through the infield for that first hit. But, look, the kid has been clutch all playoffs, and as much as we thought Yordan was just going to run the table and everybody was going to be devastatingly afraid to pitch to him, you get burned when you pitch to Jeremy Peña, especially in big-time moments. And you know, I don't think anybody could have, in their wildest dreams, thought this was the way this season was going to play out and that he was going to get even better in the playoffs in his first year with the Astros.
I think if you would have said the things that Jeremy Peña has done this season whenever opening day was here, people would have ran you out of the city.
Sure.
Everything you said would have been on Bad Take Boulevard every Thursday at 2. Because look at the things that Peña has done. If you said at the start of the season that Jeremy Peña is going to hit 253 with 22 home runs, people would think that was far-fetched. You take it like that. Before you can say, yes, you take it, that seemed a bit far-fetched at the beginning of the season. If you would have said that Jeremy Peña is not only going to take over for what many people think is the best shortstop in baseball, but Jeremy Peña is going to win the Gold Glove over the guy you think is the best shortstop in baseball, people would have said, you're nuts.
That's the one that you and I had to constantly defend the kid, because everybody, because they compared him to Correa's with his arm and his range, they kept making the comparison thinking that Jeremy Peña was a subpar defender. And then because he had errors, everybody calculates that to being a bad shortstop. Well, a lot of times he's making an error because he's trying to make a miraculous play in the hole or a throw that gets away. And you look at it and go, you've got to look a little bit deeper before you start making those assumptions, because the kid won the Gold Glove at the end of the year,
yeah.
And you and I were the two that were having to constantly come to his defense when listeners were saying, he's not a good defender. I'm like, what are you looking at?
I think the Killer Bees refers to the Jeremy Peña's good at defense market, but even us, I mean, it takes you a good sample of games before you're like, oh, this kid can really play. Like, we weren't saying that opening day. We weren't saying that the first month of the season. Like, first month of the season, we weren't saying Jeremy Peña is capable of winning a Gold Glove. So if you would have said that before opening day, everybody would have thought you were crazy.
Right.
If you would have said before the season, this dude is going to hit the game-winning homer to clinch the American League Division Series, you'd be like, what are you guys talking about? If you said that he was going to be the ALCS MVP, the first time a rookie has won an ALCS MVP, they would have thought you're nuts. First rookie shortstop to homer in the World Series. And as of today, 5 games through the World Series, Jeremy Peña owns the highest OPS of anybody else in the World Series. The rookie year that he is having, if you would have wrote the fairy tale at the start of the season, people would have thought it was fiction.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, because of the fact that, again, he had never, ever done some of the things that he's doing, not just from the records and the stats you're talking about. He had never stepped foot in a big league uniform on a field as a player. Sure, he sat through the playoffs last year as a guy that they wanted to get their feet wet and, you know, understand what it's like and want to be a part of that. But he never played. He never played a big league game till his first game. And his first game was rough. He had some issues defensively. He looked like he was pressing more than a little bit, but he was a little too big for the moment type guy in game one. And right after that, he flipped a switch. He started playing baseball the way he's capable. And then the other thing that's crazy is the power stroke that he found in his first major league season, when he has never been a power hitting shortstop, and the way he's been able to hit for power, hit for the average, but hit in key timely moments, that is exactly why you loved Carlos Correa for his career with the Astros. You look at it and go, there's no way in hell, and I would have called BS on anybody that said before the season started, oh, this dude is going to do all these things, yeah, and he's going to be one of your main guys. No one in their right mind thought that was possible.
I mean, try to take yourself back to April. The lockout's just over. You're not going to pay the man. You're not giving Carlos Correa $35.1 million. If you would have said Jeremy Peña's going to hit 250 and 22 home runs, people, maybe, that might be the one that you might have said, oh, he's got a shot. I don't think you would have said that opening day. You might have said that 25 games through the season, because remember, he got off to the hot start. But day one, I don't think you're saying that. If you would have said that he was going to win the Gold Glove and have the best run save metric of any other shortstop in the American League, no one would have bought that. Game 3 ALDS hero, no one buys it. ALCS MVP, nobody buys it. First rookie shortstop to homer in the World Series, nobody buys it. And the highest OPS in the World Series right now, no one buys that season
too?
For Jeremy Peña.
All that in a nutshell, the microcosm of all of that is the ball that he hit that got out last night, they didn't think was gone. They didn't even think that he hit it
weird.
Very well. And it was like, wait a minute.
He reacted to it that well either.
I think he knew he got it at the right spot of the bat, but he might have got it too high. He thought he might have gotten it too high. But, yeah, that was my microcosm of his whole season was the fact that even on that call, you didn't get the Joe what's-his-name wow and getting all excited and you know, the grandiose, you know, versions of what a lot of people have a problem with in terms of how great and crazy he's gotten for Phillies calls. It was kind of like that whole season in a nutshell because Peña has been so much more than anybody could have expected. If you want to nitpick, you can nitpick things that are ridiculous in terms of, well, his average. Correa didn't hit for 300 either. The fact that he was being unfairly compared every single night to a guy that had one of the best cannons in the history of playing shortstop, that's the best, I think, shortstop arm in the game, and is for his size too because they're both bigger kids. But the fact that Correa is able to have the range that he has, it's unfair from day one to be able to say, well, he's not a good defender because he's not Carlos Correa. Nobody is. Nobody has that skill set in the game right now.
Peña's a better defensive shortstop than Correa this year. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Get Chris in here. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Chris?
Yeah, hey, guys. That was a great Game 5 last night. And you guys are right. We wouldn't be where we are this year in the postseason without Jeremy Peña. And just kudos to him and his maturity. We talked about it all season. You know, and I know he's personally going to be glad when this season is over with. I think he's making a Peña brand rather than Carlos Correa. I know he's tired of being compared to Carlos Correa. You know, maybe he just doesn't have the sexy gun for an arm like Correa does. But you're right, Jeremy. He won the Gold Glove. He's a better defensive shortstop. Later, guys.
Appreciate the call, Chris. Yeah, there's a lot of different metrics that you can look at to compare defense. I think defensive metrics are harder to use as a true comparison as, like, offensive metrics. It's a little bit – it's tough. The old, like, eye test, like, the days of Derek Jeter winning Gold Gloves because he was a really good hitter, those days are gone because there is a little bit more tangible evidence that you can use. That tangible evidence that is used a lot by baseball writers that are voting for the Gold Gloves, they favor Jeremy Peña by a mile this year over Carlos Correa.
Yeah, look, and when you start analyzing – and looking at what he's capable of doing, the fact is that, you know, you can classify him a lot of ways and nitpick, like you said, but we said all season long, was he third in the entire league in terms of runs saved, and he was the number one ranked shortstop in terms of saving runs by his defense. And that was something that I brought up multiple times, especially on social media, when people still somehow, some way, had that in the back of their mind that he wasn't a good defensive shortstop. It wasn't even comparing him to Correa. It was, and it was even the other night. Someone tweeted, I think they tagged both of us, when, you know, we were talking about the fact that he won the Gold Glove because we were the ones that were telling you all year long that he was a good defender. Well, he had 20 errors. Again, are we just going to look at that and not say how the errors happened when he was trying to make the extraordinary play as opposed to the routine play and how it relates otherwise with the deeper metrics to how many runs he saved? Like, this kid had a Cinderella season for this team, and so much for HEB and all those jinxes too, huh?
Yeah, so much for that. Now, like, the same people that are saying the errors thing are the same people that are saying, I'll take a 300 hitter with 5 home runs over a 290 hitter with 45 home runs. There's some people that are just behind the times, antiquated opinion, and they're not going to change. 713-780-ESPN, Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drift in the Heights. Killer Bees are on a roll in BZ Money. We've been winning you fortunes with our bets in the NFL back-to-back weeks. Sincerely, we've had back-to-back positive weeks. We're going to make it 3 in a row. BZ Money next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
We were just talking about trying to make you guys some money. You can make money on your own by going to mybookie.ag because you know sports and you know how to pick winners if that's what you think. The time is now to get to mybookie.ag. Remember this promo code at all times. It's bet975 because it's going to help you out in a lot of ways. Right now, mybookie.ag is the biggest online selection of odds and contests for all your sports betting needs anytime, anywhere, any place, and it really is amazing. You can bet on the NFL, bet on NCAA, bet on swinging for the fences in the World Series, or swing for the fences with the brand new money bag. The MyBookie money bag is a one-of-a-kind opportunity to spin for crazy odds on props and future bets, and then place your bet, spin the wheel, and get ready to score epic odds on the best teams, athletes, and events. Sign up free today. Use your promo code BET975. Get your first deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. And, for instance, if you put $1,000 in, you're going to get $500 extra. That means more money in your account, more games you can bet on, and more chances to win. Promo code BET975. Use it anytime they ask for one. Claim your deposit bonus, give yourself that competitive edge, and have some fun. Turn your picks into winners at MyBookie.ag. It's not just a sports book, it's a community. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it, MyBookie.ag.